So imagine me, I'm like 12 or 13 years old. I have hair about this big, like this massive, horrible afro. I'm back in Manitoba in my dad's upholstery shop where I worked after school. And my dad's sitting at his sewing table here, and I'm sitting at the gluing table here, and we're having a discussion. You've all had those discussions, right? It's really a fight, but you call it a discussion because it sounds nicer. And this fight had been going on for days, back and forth and back and forth. And he'd say one thing, I'd counter right away. You know, neither of us even looking at each other. We're just like having this rote fight that we've had for the last, I don't know how long. And it was about, what's the right way to fix a seat? I know, life-changing, really important stuff to be fighting about. But for us, this is an upholstery shop. This is what we did for a living, right? And my dad's whole plan was, we're going to sew this together and then we're going to put it together like this. And I'm like, no, that's ridiculous. We're going to glue it and put it together the opposite way because that makes way more sense. My dad's like, there's no way we're doing that. That's going to take me forever. We're going to sew it and do it that way. And I'm like, hell no, we're gluing this thing. This makes total sense. We've been having that discussion for like days now. What's the right way to fix a seat? And we're both saying, but I'm right. He's saying, but no, Vince, I'm right. And I'm saying, no, Dad, I'm right. And then I had this kind of moment. At first, I probably thought it was a stroke. I'm not sure what happened. But all of a sudden, my chest was like, oh, I could breathe again. Because in that moment, I had this thought. It was one of those thoughts that I don't even realize how big it was at the time. But it's changed my life. Like, completely changed it. And I, you know, however many years, what am I, 42? Do the math on that. However long ago that was. It's changed my spirituality. Huge. Because in that moment I realized, I don't sew. Well, give me a little sewing machine, like a little dressmaker's machine. I'm great sewing. But my dad's got this big, like, massive industrial sewing machine. And he's got it set to, like, a hair trigger. So if there's like a fly and it lands on the pedal, this thing is like 0 to 60 and it's like taking off both your fingers. And in sewing, you know, you're right in there. The fact that I have 10 fingers is testament that I did not use my dad's sewing machine growing up. But my dad has been sewing for probably 30 years at this moment. The things that guy can do with a sewing machine will blow your mind. And I realized, what's the right way to fix a seat? If you're my dad and you can sew, sewing makes a ton of sense, right? It's quick. It's easy. He does an amazing job. It's going to be done the first time, or right the first time. But I'm not very good at sewing. So what's the right way for me to fix a seat? If I wanted to sew it, technically I could. It would have taken me all day of taking it, like sewing it and then taking it apart because I wrecked it and then sewing it again, taking it apart, and then basically going away for coffee break and having my dad sew it for me anyways. You know, I could have sewed it, right? Given enough time, theoretically, maybe. But see, the realization was this. Here's me and my dad. We both have, what's the right answer to fix a seat? They're completely different. And yet, they're both right. Depending on who answers that question. And we've been arguing about this for days. Well, our whole life. Me and my dad argued about this stuff all the time. But in that moment, I realized, I don't think there's one right answer. And that changed everything. And I think you guys have all felt this too. So imagine yourself at the ice cream store, you know, the big ice cream stand. What's the right ice cream to order? Chocolate? Vanilla? Rocky, I don't eat ice cream, so I'm drawing a blank here. Rocky Road, Tiger, Bubblegum. That was dramatic. Thanks, brother. Right? There's no, what's the right answer to, what is the right ice cream? Now I'm all lost. What was I talking about again? Ice cream. Tiger ice cream. Or how about this? What's the right car to buy? You seen that crappy old right-hand drive Japanese import over there? That's mine. It's cheap. It'll take you anywhere. It'll go like 4x4-ing. You can drive down the road. It's the best vehicle ever. If you like to spend every weekend fixing it. So is that the right car to buy? For those of you who are in partnerships, are you and your partner on the same page? Or is there like your car and my car? Or your parents' car? They're like, you should buy this car. You should totally buy my old car. It's a great car. And you're like, I wouldn't be caught dead in that car. We have different answers, don't we? How about what movie to see this week? What's the right movie? What's the right way to parent your children? Eesh. That one just gets fight started. Right way to handle your money? Should you buy this? Should you not buy this? Everyone you talk to has got a different answer, right? So what's the right answer? You name it. You go through kind of all of our life, our society. We have almost unnumberable number of problems that really come down to it depends on who answers it. That depends on what the right answer is. Someone will say, yes, but there's objective truth. Well, nowadays we're learning from quantum mechanics that even in science, who observes it changes what we actually see, changes the experiment. So here's what I want to leave you with today. What if you took seriously this concept that you live in all of your life, when you're ordering your ice cream, you're buying your car, you're doing your work at work, that there's a different right answer depending on who answers the question. What would happen if you take that seriously in your spirituality?
It's an interesting, if you're reading the lyrics, it's an interesting song Frey wrote. Casting a picture of God is a guy sitting on the corner of West and Amistad smoking a cigarette. I want to ask you, just as I begin, what is your view of God? What does God look like to you? What's your image, the picture that comes to mind when you think of God? Is it Gandalf? some people, oh yeah, that's him right there. Is he even Caucasian? Have you ever thought about this? Like, what pictures come to your mind? Maybe he's not. Maybe he's of a different ethnicity or color of skin. Maybe it's more of a Morgan Freeman kind of image that comes to mind. Maybe it's a George Burns that comes to mind. Is he angry in your mind? Is he happy? Is he sarcastic? Does he care? Am I on? Good. Okay. Is he sympathetic? Is he loving? When you imagine hearing his voice, is it one with his arms stretched out or one that's holding a gavel waiting to come down on you with your next mistake? For many years, two common images of God, especially in religious circles, was that God was male and that he was kind of a father figure. How many are kind of familiar with those images? Heavenly Father, a male figure, which by the way, has worked well for many, especially those who had a great experience with a dad, with an earthly father. The thought that God is a heavenly dad, that image had a way for those people who had these great earthly fathers to just be able to connect with them in a very personal, very intimate, very relational way. They loved it. However, for many, the image of God as a male father figure was terrifying. And you can understand that, especially for those who have been abused, perhaps, by an earthly dad. Physically, emotionally, verbally, sexually. Maybe they were abandoned by the earthly dad. When someone comes along and says, God is your heavenly father, for those kind of people who have hit the wall with their earthly dad, that notion of God being something similar makes them run in the opposite direction. Sends shivers up their spine. The last thing they're thinking about doing is connecting with their heavenly dad. In 2007, a Christian author wrote a fictional book called The Shack. How many heard of this book? Okay. the author blows the common stereotypical picture, especially the Christian picture of God, out of the water by describing God as kind of a larger, jovial African-American woman who loves to bake. I pictured this woman as I read this book as kind of a, in my mind, I pictured Aunt Jemima. You know, that was kind of the look that kind of came to my mind as I read this book. In the story, while God, while she bakes, she opens up her kitchen as a safe haven for the broken and the wounded to come and heal. It's there in her kitchen that she listens, she comforts, she speaks wisdom into the lives of those that are there. The main character in the story experiences that. He experiences God's kitchen. In the midst of an absolute heart-wrenching experience, he finds the loving embrace of God, who looks much different than he ever imagined. When the shack hit the bookstores, a large segment of the Christian population came unglued. They were screaming angry at this book, saying, "That is not right. How can a Christian describe God in this way? You can't suggest for a second that God looks like that." They quoted Bible passages referencing the male pronouns being used when referring to God, emphasizing verses that speak about God as a father, not as a mother. "You can't dispute what the Bible says," they said. "God can't be all these different things. He's the same for everyone at all times and all places." I would hazard a guess that 99% of those who were screaming out in protest were what Scott Peck would describe as stage two Christians. In case you missed it, maybe you're just joining us, over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the four common stages of the spiritual journey that a guy named Scott Peck has proposed. He's not alone. He's kind of built on the work of another guy named James Fowler. There's a number of different people that have been writing on this. These are primarily psychologists watching Christians develop on their spiritual journey and noticing some patterns that seem to happen. We've talked about how stage one is what they loosely describe as kind of the criminal stage. It's the stage where you don't have any faith. A life without faith, completely egocentric. But then you move into the next stage when you open up to the possibility that there maybe is more to this world than just meeting your own selfish needs. Perhaps there's something even beyond what you can experience with the five senses. Maybe there's a deeper thing going on here in the world. And you begin searching for God. You begin searching for more than even what this world seems to talk about. So when you enter stage two, a person on this level thrives on very concrete, very crystal clear beliefs, black and white rules. It's a world of possibilities. They need someone to just spell it out nice and clear, package it up, give them a kit, say, "This is what you believe to experience God." At this level, there's a high priority placed on learning the right doctrines and practices of religious systems that you've found. Often the instructions and the explanations at stage two are extremely clear. Do exactly as we say, believe exactly as we lay this out, and you can be assured of your membership and your right standing, both with God and with this community. Stay within the lines. The approach is what is often referred to as kind of a homogeneous approach. Homogeneous basically means that everything is alike. It's the same. Everyone is encouraged to do the same things, to believe the same things. They're told what to do, what not to do, what is right, what is wrong, what to believe, what not to believe. It's clean, it's clear, it's the same, it's alike. That's why everyone at stage two was reacting to the notion that God could be viewed as an Aunt Jemima. Because it didn't fit the model. It didn't fit what they had been taught of the image of God. It didn't conform. But though people in stage three were freaking out, the book was selling like wildfire. I mean, it couldn't stay on the shelves. Millions and millions. The thing went global, being translated in all these different languages. You know who really ate up the book? Those who were on stage three of their spiritual journey, known as the skeptics. These are often the people who were at one time fully entrenched in stage two in this rule-based spirituality, but then something happened. They learned something, or they experienced something that seemed to contradict what their parents or their pastors or their leaders had taught them. And they said, wait a second, that's not right. What you told me there isn't exactly accurate. Depending on how strong the experience or how negative the experience was in that process, coming through stage two, how entrenched they were in the belief and the way of stage two, people moving into stage three can just throw themselves at reevaluating everything, turning over every rock. What do I think about this? What do I think about that? I don't know if I buy that. I don't know, but hey, just wait a second. And just, they kind of live in this sense of arms crossed going, prove it. They're the skeptics. They question everything from what is the Bible? Why do you trust the Bible? Where did it come from anyways? Sexuality, doctrines about heaven, hell. They just go through it all. They're going, wait a second, I'm not buying anything until I know for myself where that thing came from. It was these stage threers, when they caught wind of the shack, man, they started licking their lips. They're like going, oh yeah, here's an opportunity to fire back at the protesters coming from stage two about the book. You can't describe God like that. They're going, oh really? Why don't we talk about the male-dominated culture back in the day when the Bible was written? The fact that the women weren't writing the Bible at that time and weren't allowed. Why don't we talk about the different ways that God has been referred to in the Bible? Oh, really? You can't describe God like that? Prove that he's a male. Oh, they were just loving this. And the war starts. If you watched anything on the Shack online, the forums just went for miles. People back and forth. Stage twoers wrestling with the stage threers. Crazy. Stage threers loved the Shack because it turned conventional beliefs on their ear and challenged the homogeneous approach of stage two faith that they'd become so skeptical of. But there's another group who loved the Shack as well, only for a different reason than the stage threers. This group of people weren't caught up in the arguments of the stage two and stage three. They were the ones who were noticing the amazing effect that the book was having on the lives of people who were reading it. They're listening to the stories who had all these broken images of God, who had been beaten, abused by father figures who wanted to run away from just the notion of God. But by reading this book, all of a sudden, their hearts were being opened up going, could God be that? I was always told he was this. Is there any way God can be this? Because if God can be that, I want to meet him. I want to experience him. People coming out of the woodwork going, I left church so long ago and I vowed I'd never go back. Because they pointed me to a God who was angry, who was waiting to club me if I did something wrong. But this book is telling me that maybe God can be something else. This group of people were watching stories like that. They're going, whoa, whoa. The jovial Aunt Jemima God is reaching out and he's changing hearts of people. This group of people just kept on saying, okay, stage tours, we get it. We get that this new picture of God doesn't work for you. We get it. We get that it destabilizes you and it wigs you out. We get it. Okay. Stage threeers, yeah. We get it. Yeah, they can't prove that God, okay. Would everyone just stop fighting? And look for a second at the powerful impact that this view of God is having all around us. Look at the millions of copies that people are buying, digesting this book, thinking hard, processing hard about whether God out there is truly someone they want to know. Just look for a second. This group of people seem to be looking at them and saying, perhaps there's more than one right view of God. I'm not sure, but I think Jesus might have been trying to get at this one day when a rich young guy approached him. He came to him with a question. He said, what should I do to inherit eternal life? To live this kind of spiritual life that you're talking about. He said, I've kept the commandments. I've kept the universal lists. I've done everything that everyone's doing. In our vernacular, I've followed the homogeneous script. Done everything that I'm supposed to be doing. Jesus looks at him and he says, I think there's something for you. You haven't tried yet. He said, I want you to go and sell everything you own and I want you to give it to the poor and then I want you to come and follow me. Now, I want you to note something. Nowhere else in the Bible do we read of Jesus telling anyone else to do this. And he was friends with some pretty wealthy people. There was Zacchaeus, there was Matthew, both tax collectors, they would have had a lot of coin. He didn't tell them, sell everything if you want to come and follow me. Didn't tell them. If you read through the Bible, there is no law, no written expectation saying that all Christian followers, followers of Christ, followers of God, need to sell all they own, give it to the poor in order to be a follower of the way. It's not there. So why would Jesus give those specific instructions to this guy and not tell others? Let's just keep this question right there. If you can identify strongly with this concept of there being more than one right approach on the spiritual journey, you have likely begun to experience stage 4 of the spiritual journey. Scott Peck describes it as the mystical stage, referring mostly to the comfort that people at this stage feel with mystery. There comes a point for people who have been entrenched in stage 3 and questioning everything and throwing belief out the window. There comes a point for many when they grow tired of removing belief, of upending everything that they once knew and believed. They get tired of it. The negative energy dissipates. For some, there was never a whole lot of negative energy to begin with. You might not have been entrenched in stage 2. You look at all the fighting, you're going, I don't get that. Regardless whether you come from a lot of negative stuff and you fought or maybe it's just new, but you kind of skip that piece, you come to a place that all that's left is this sincere desire to connect with the more, something beyond something deeper, something divine. You want to find some deeper meaning in this world, in your own life. But it's different than those in stage two. You're not naively looking for some belief system that you believe is going to answer all of life's mysteries. You're pretty skeptical that someone's going to come in with a silver bullet that explains everything. Nah. You don't necessarily buy that that's what's going to happen. Yet you're still drawn to the mystery. You long for this divine connection. To find ways to engage yourself spiritually again. You recognize that there are gifts and passions and abilities in your life. And there's something craving inside you being able to give back. Do something that's going to build something worthwhile in this world. Do something that gives meaning, that makes some kind of difference. You're going, man, this isn't cutting it out here. I want to do something that will matter. You may be still skeptical of church, but something inside you still hopes down deep to find some form of spiritual community, to come alongside others who maybe are on the search as well. Unlike stage three, though, where you're cleaning out beliefs, you no longer find convincing. At stage four, you want to rebuild. You're tired of turning over rocks. You're going, no, but okay. What is it I can believe in? Maybe this is where you start experimenting. You start grabbing onto something. You say, okay, I'm going to try this. It might be a traditional, more orthodox belief. It might be something totally unconventional. But rather than asking, is this the right belief? I got to make sure that this is the right belief. You're not doing that. Your question at stage four is, will this work for me? You see, if there is one overarching characteristic of stage four, it's that right there. It's the belief that there is more than one right way of doing this, of experiencing the spiritual journey. I think that's what Jesus was getting at with that rich guy. I think it's what he's done throughout his entire life, pushing people to the stage four. I think that's why he gave that rich guy the assignment he didn't give anyone else. Because he understood that what this guy needed was different than what other people needed. I don't know how, I don't know why, but I think he looked into that guy's life and he said, I think you might have an issue here with your possessions and your money. See, here's an assignment for you. Perhaps that guy's looking around going, well, why didn't you tell them? He's going, don't worry about them. You asked me what you needed. I think he was demonstrating that spiritual life as it develops isn't to remain homogeneous. It's meant to move into this heterogeneous way of being and living. Because we're all so different. I look across this room and knowing so many of your different stories in your lives, I'm telling you, different upbringings. Good, some really good, some very bad. You come from different cultures, some steeped in Mennonite land in Steinbach, Manitoba. Heaven forbid. Warps you. That stuff warps you. No, I'm joking. We come with different personalities, different insecurities, different hang-ups. There's different addictions in this room. There's things that some of us are drawn to other people don't struggle with. There's things that some of you are doing better than anyone else. Other people don't have that gift you got. Different passions and abilities. You realize this heterogeneous approach just makes sense. Because no two spiritual journeys were ever meant to look alike. It's the paradigm that Vince was talking about earlier. That he experienced in his upholstery shop, his dad's upholstery shop that day. He's going, there's two ways of skin in this. There's actually two right ways. Mind blown. It all depends on what you're bringing to the table, right? People in stage four really get this. For them, growing in their faith growing on the spiritual journey involves incredible experimentation. Trying on different beliefs. Trying different practices and ritual. For some, it's trying out different belief pieces. Trying to figure out, okay, if I believe this, does that make sense of God and my world and my experience? According to Rob Bell, it's like there's springs on a trampoline. You put them on that trampoline, not just to say, oh, look at these cool springs I have. The point of it isn't the springs. The point is jumping. And the question is this spring helping me lift off? Is it actually making me jump? Is it helping me? And if it doesn't, stage four spirituality says, take off the spring and pitch it out. Question is it working? This is why there are certain beliefs that I hold. Quite honestly, Vince looks at it and goes, dodgy. Doesn't work for him. And vice versa. Things he believes, I just go, man, I've tried that. It doesn't make sense of it for me. And you see this all throughout Christianity. How many different denominations are there? How many different kinds of churches? And people decry that. Oh, that's so bad. We're so divided. You know what it is? It's people that have tried on different doctrines and they go, oh, this really makes sense for me. People go, no, that doesn't make sense to me. And their answer was, well, I got to leave then. I got to go and start up a new church where people who believe this thing are going to be in this place. This goes for the same way we connect with God. Some appreciate a very traditional form of prayer where they can recite maybe the Lord's Prayer. Maybe they're sitting here and they're going, Jeff, why don't you just pray the way I've always heard growing up? Other people, it doesn't work for them. They just need solitude. For some, it's music. For some, it's nature. What is this? This is heterogeneity. It's you figuring out how it is that you connect with God. And when you put it into work, boom, it's like fireworks. But why doesn't it work the same way for the next guy? Because it was never meant to. Stage four is get this. It's kind of concept. There being different ways for this thing to work. It allows for so many different expressions of connecting with God and living out the spiritual journey. It can freak people at stage two right out. How many know what I'm saying? Like when you say, hey, well, you know what? I guess we can just agree to disagree. I guess there's two ways of looking at this. Whoa, I could have swore you just said there's two ways. Actually, no, I said there's more than two ways. When we started exploring with this, the thing I heard over and over and over was, you go down that slippery slope, and pretty soon it is a no holds barred, anything goes. You're going to have people saying, man, if you want to do this or do that, go for it. God's good with it. You don't want to do that, and go for it. I just heard this again and again. You are, Jarvis, you are cascading down a slippery slope that's going to lead people into complete anarchy. Actually, I was kind of white-knuckling it when they would say that. I'm like, I hope not. But do you think that people haven't been saying that for a long time? In fact, if you had a look at the life of Jesus, there were people all over, even looking at Jesus himself going, I don't know what this guy's doing. He's breaking the rules. He's doing stuff we never allowed before. Jesus even talked about it one day. He seemed to be okay with the prospect that people are going to take this in different ways. Different things. In fact, he kind of warned people. He said, hey, listen, there's going to be some bad apples out there. They're going to take this and they're going to run with the freedom and the liberty and this heterogeneic approach, this diverse approach. They're going to run with it. He called them false prophets. He said, watch out for them. They're like sheep in wolf's clothing. No, wolves in sheep's clothing. Sorry. Vicious wolves in sheep's clothing. They look like harmless sheep. You know how he told them to how to pick them out? You know what he said? This will really give it away. Watch for this. Was it hey, watch their statement of faith. Watch what they say they believe. Watch. Nuh-uh. He said, just watch the way they act. He refers to people's actions as fruit. He says, can you pick grapes from thorn bushes? Or figs from thistles? Uh-uh. A good tree produces good fruit. A bad tree produces bad fruit. He said, you can identify a tree by its fruit. In the same way, you can identify people, the real deals, by their actions. Talk about simplifying it, eh? Just watch the fruit they're producing in their lives. Stage four people get this. They know that you can have the perfect orthodox Christian beliefs all screwed down and be the absolute most miserable people on earth. Huh? Judgmental, condescending, making people around you feel like the lowliest, most unlovable, most unworthy people in the world, while claiming to be the perfect believing Christian. Stage four people at this stage care much less about what you believe and way more about what kind of fruit you're producing in your life. If it's envisioning God as an African-American woman that connects you and draws you close to God, and it's producing something amazing in your life, who am I to question that? Focuses on what kind of fruit your faith is producing. That's the judge. Think for a second the implications of stage four spirituality in your life. No longer are you sitting there trying to analyze every right belief or wrong belief. You're not trying to hold to some kind of, no, this is it. This is it. And don't you tell me it's wrong. You're not doing that. And you're not sitting there going, oh yeah, that's a bunch of BS what you're saying. You're not fighting to prove everyone else wrong. All you're doing is you're saying, what are my beliefs actually doing for me? Are they producing something great? I think about the parents of the kid who just came out as being gay. And all of their beliefs in their head going, oh my God, are we gonna have to disown this guy? Are we gonna have to walk away from him? Whatever. I think about my friend who's looking at me, asking me if the most godly people in his life he's ever known, his Hindu parents, are actually gonna make it to heaven. I wonder what Jesus would say. I wonder if he'd be looking at him going, hey, listen, check out the fruit on that tree. Are you going to be the judge of that? Looks like pretty good fruit on there. This will make some squirm. I know I'll probably get some great email tomorrow morning. Write it well. The judgment and the arguing's got to end. The looking over at your neighbor and trying to figure out whether God is actively working in their life or not, it's got to end. We're about doing things that are going to make you more like Christ in your world. So the question today is it working for you? Is what you're doing right now in your life producing great fruit? Let that be the judge. And when you get to this stage four, you know better than to start trying to make judgments on other people. You know better. In fact, if anything, you're just looking at your life and it's just like, today was a great day, or I can do better, or I got to swap this out. Man, I love what's being produced over in that person. I got to talk to them. It's here, between you and God. May this be a community that oozes stage four faith. It welcomes people no matter where they've been, no matter what they are, no matter how messed up in their eyes they are. They're brought in saying, listen, this is between you and God. We're going to love you. Come on. We're entering this mysterious journey. And I hope on your journey you find things that elevate you, that allow you to experience God in such an amazing way. And if something I'm doing is a little different than what you're doing, that's okay. Don't get wigged out about that. It's okay. And vice versa. Because we're just going to let the fruit on the lives tell the story. Done. 11:34. Here's the deal. If you need help on this, maybe right now everything I'm telling you is just like, oh, it's making you squirm. You're wrestling. We want to help. We're going to, on April 12th, we're running our very first workshop called the Spiritual Life. And it's designed to be able to unpack how we've built Friends Church in terms of our values and how we operate, lined up with this thing, to help you figure out where you are on the journey and what your next steps are. We'll provide resources. You need books, you need podcasts, you need help. Maybe just a big Q&A we're going to provide too. Oh, and some food. If you would like to get signed up for that, there's a sign-up sheet at the back so we can know how many to plan for. Second thing, next week, we start a new series called the Easter Stories. This will be a 4-week series, I believe, leading up to Easter, that is going to explore the different lenses people have looked at to explain Easter, what all actually happened over Easter, through a very stage four lens. Because if you can believe this, different people have looked at and explained Easter in different ways historically. So we're going to tell that. We're going to allow you to try them on and see which approach launches you to God. It ignites your spiritual journey. You won't want to miss it. Listen, we're done. Let me pray for you. God, for every person in this room that's wrestling somewhere in this journey, I pray they leave this morning or after listening to this message, God, excited to be able to take another step in their journey of trying to experience who you are. Whatever it takes, wherever they are, God, I pray that you would speak hope, and that they would take a step this week that move them closer to you and to the life you want for them. In your name I pray. Amen. Amen. Thanks, you guys, for being here. We will see you next week. All right? Have a great week.